Hey, Drew.
Hey, Mark.
Do you believe that there is extraterrestrial life out there?
Shoot for the captive ball.
I want to so bad, but no.
But no. Wow. Okay. Are you familiar with something called the Fermi paradox?
Yeah. This is the kind of like the idea that like there should be some sort of signal, but there's not from aliens, right? Is that right?
So it's actually a little bit more generic than that.
Okay.
It's that the universe is both so old and so vast that the likelihood that there is other intelligent life out there in the universe is basically guaranteed, right? Like if you just sort of back of the envelope math, figure it out. And so the Fermi paradox asks the question, if that's true, where is everybody?
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so there are a lot of opinions and options. And Fermi, I guess, you know, famous scientist, but was also at, I think he was at Los Alamos, right? I think Fermi spent some time there. It doesn't matter where Fermi has spent his time, but a lot of people have tried to think through how do you solve that, like in a way that makes sense? And there are a few kind of conversations on and ideas on why there could be intelligent life out there, but we haven't heard from anybody yet. And so I'm gonna list off a couple of ideas that solve this paradox, and I'd be curious just to get your take on which you think is like most likely. Like,
okay.
What do you think?
Yeah.
So one answer is that life or intelligent life is actually way rarer than we think it is.
Yeah.
In which case, then the answer is we are the only ones. Or another posited option is we're actually super early to the game. We're just, there is going to be a bunch of intelligent life. We just happen to be very early in that track. And we and other civilizations have just not gotten to the point of interstellar communication or travel. Or we're super late to the party. It's already happened. Intelligent beings visited Earth before humans developed any ability to try and detect or communicate with these kinds of beings. Or they have already since, you know, long since wiped themselves out. Another option for you is that intelligent life will naturally extinguish itself at some point.
That's dark.
Think about like through nuclear holocaust or through political limitations and infighting across a planet with a society.
It's almost like different alien civilizations are all competing for like speed run, you know, mm-hmm. not world record. This is like a universal record, right?
Yeah.
Like
80%.
Hey, we evolved from single cell to nuclear extinct, 2.7 billion. Top that.
Exactly.
Earth.
Yeah. And so actually it's interesting because Fermi has like 9 steps along the way, and like, yeah, single cell to multi-cell life is like, you know, like halfway through the process of like identifying core ingredients needed to generate. And like from step 8 to step 9 is like, step 8 is like develop like technology, and step 9, colonial expansion, like across the universe. And so like, we're like somewhere between step 8 and step 9, there is something happening. So I'm going to read the other 2 options for you, and then I'm going to tell you which one I think is probably most likely, in my opinion. It's not grounded in any science, just gut check. And I would love to get your opinion. The next one is called the dark forest solution, which is actually named for Liu Cixin's 3 body problem trilogy.
Okay.
If you're familiar with
that. I have heard of it.
And that posits that intelligent life is actually all over, like it's everywhere in the universe, but these other societies know to keep quiet and not broadcast signals because other intelligent life is highly violent and is trying to hunt
mm-hmm.
lesser intelligent species.
Yeah.
And then the last, and this is a non-exhaustive list, but like the other kind of posited option to solve the Fermi paradox is we actually have evidence. The government's just keeping it from us.
Oh, so it's true. That's the real one, right? That's the answer. The answer is that we, are you telling me now that we have evidence?
I'll never say.
All right. So I gotta evaluate.
I'll tell you which one. So while you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you which one I think is, and maybe this is because, I don't know, like the state of the world or something. It seems to me that intelligent life naturally extinguishes itself before you get to the point of global expansion to the universe. Because I just like, you look at how humanity is so tribalistic that we couldn't even come together over the course of a national, like a global pandemic a few years ago to like try and buckle down and get through shit, that that between the Cold War, like the only reason we avoided like nuclear Holocaust in the Cold War is because a couple of people refused orders at certain points in time.
You know, in humanity's defense, we also did not exterminate ourselves during the pandemic. So we got at least one thing right.
Yeah. I mean, take the good with the bad, I guess. But to me, it seems to be we're heading towards like an asymptote that suggests before we get to like this great technological singularity that makes the world a utopia and we go Star Trek on everyone, that we're likely to just tear ourselves down and destroy each other.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah, I think that's not.
Here I am once again, the host of the positive episodes of Flipping Out Podcast.
Yeah. We were talking about some nuclear annihilation, a little bit of like extinction of life on Earth. Why not? I think
I like to keep it light.
The first one is the most compelling to me.
You think it's just incredibly rare.
Life is just not as common as we think. I mean, we have absolutely no evidence to think that life is anything but incredibly rare.
Didn't we find like single-celled organisms on Mars or something recently?
I don't think so.
No?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can check me on that. But as far as I know, we have no evidence of life ever occurring anywhere outside of Earth. And we have enough technology, I think, that like, yeah, the universe is vast. But like, if, I don't know, from my point of view, life should either be everywhere or basically nowhere. And all evidence points to it being basically nowhere. And so that's my most compelling. And I think as my second kind of runner-up, I would say, you know, maybe we're just the most evolved of all the life. And there's lots of life that has settled into kind of like a local,
yeah, the
local minimum of
the rare intelligence argument I find more compelling than the rare life argument.
Yeah, there you go. Like there's tons of like algal blooms on other planets that are just like, you know, this is good enough. We don't need to evolve like
or like limbs. Critters or something, right? Like I could see the possibility existing that.
I'd almost say like it's going to be like algae everywhere.
I mean, that's going to be most prominent, but I would think maybe in certain other subsets you get whatever.
Yeah, but I'm pessimistic. Like I really do want to believe that there is something else out there, intelligent or not. I just don't think so.
Well, just to circle back on it, NASA announced earlier in 2024 that the headline, and this is from science.org, says, NASA says it found possible signs of life on Mars. There are a lot of maybes. And so that's the headline. The main gist of it is that they found a rock from one of the rovers, the Perseverance rover, that contains signs that maybe ancient microbial life once existed on Mars. But if we ever do find life on Mars, that pretty much takes away that option from
I think you're right.
The Fermi paradox. I ask you about extraterrestrial life because I want to talk to you about Foo Fighters.
Oh, that took a turn I wasn't expecting.
Really? I'm surprised you're surprised about that because do you know what where Foo Fighters, what that means, that term?
Oh, man. I mean, I know who they are. I've seen them in concert, but...
I mean, there's a big hint if we're talking about extraterrestrial life.
So the Foo is like UFO, like UFO, UFO?
UFO. Foo Fighter was just the term in World War II by Allied aircraft pilots to describe UFOs. And that's where the band Foo Fighters gets their name.
So wait, a Foo Fighter is a UFO? Or mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that, no.
Yeah. There you go.
So wait, Dave Grohl is an alien then?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Obviously. Mm. All right. So let's talk about this pinball machine. Today, we're going to talk about the Foo Fighters pinball machine. Specifically, it's a Stern pinball machine. Came out in 2023. And specifically, today, we're going to go check out the premium edition of Foo Fighters, which is unique because I know both you and I have seen Foo Fighters as a pinball machine in the wild, but it's only ever been the pro model.
Yeah, that's right.
And for a reminder of those listening, Stern in modern pinball design generally releases multiple versions of a machine. One that's cheaper called Pro. It's sort of got the main minimum features needed to execute on the vision of the game. And then there is sort of the full bells and whistles design intended by the designer, and that's in the premium and higher limited edition models. So today we're going to have a chance to look at the premium edition.
Wow, that's great.
Which will be a lot of fun. It is created by, and I am not making this up, a guy named Jack Danger.
No.
Jack Danger. You know him. You seem like you're like, wow, I went to high school with Jack Danger.
I did not, but this is the pinball streamer, right?
I'm unfamiliar. So you, like,
This is Deadflip.
His name is Jack Danger.
Like 95% positive that Jack Danger is
Deadflip. That's his real name?
Do you know Deadflip?
I've seen a few of his clips and streams.
Yeah, I think that's him.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, good for you, Deadflip, if you're out there listening.
Very cool. Did not know that he was making machines.
It's
cool.
It is his first pinball machine.
That, I mean, that tracks.
Right? I mean, I should say first, like, produced or whatever. There are chances maybe he's tinkered on stuff elsewhere, but, like, this is his first credited game design. And it is based on the gimmick of the Foo Fighters pinball machine is that it's a fictional Saturday morning cartoon series is, like, the premise of the game. Where the Foo Fighters band is a group of heroes that have a giant robot fighting against an alien overlord who wants to remove music from existence.
Phenomenal.
Yep. It all tracks, and that feels very like 80s, like Saturday morning cartoon for me. Quick overview of the game. We are here to save various cities from this alien invasion as the Foo Fighters band. The way we're going to do that in the game is you unlock cities. You do that, the white arrows will light up on different shots across the play field. You hit the white arrow shots, which will eventually light an arrow on a left ramp, which is a short ramp in the lower left area of the play field. And that will then lock the ball somewhere while you choose a city that you're going to go save.
Okay.
And they are like, you know, I think it's like, so Seattle for sure, because that's where Dave Grohl's from. I want to say like Area 51. And then, like, New York and some other, like, big cities. But, like, it's a little tongue-in-cheek.
The main cities in the United States, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles.
Area 51.
And Roswell.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And then once you start a city mode, like any other mode, you follow the shots that are lit up to complete it. And then the other thing that's sort of worth noting is there is an overlord toy. It's an alien and like a UFO with like big hands. And you bash it and it should trap a ball at some point. And then you bash the trapped ball to start a multi-ball mode. That's sort of the two main areas to really focus on, I think. Cool gimmicks then of the machine itself. One, the alien captive ball thing like that I just talked about. That seems pretty neat. Even though it's been seen elsewhere, always kind of fun to trap a ball and then have to free it. There is also a captive ball to the left of this alien jail kind of thing. And if you hit that enough times, it charges up the action button, which is like on the lap bar. It's the center button there.
Yeah.
And when it's lit, if you hit the action button, it lets you collect lit shots during modes and multi-balls.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
So think of bashing the captive ball to help advance your game when
sure.
you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, we're focused on saving the world from the destruction of all music, and we're in a cartoon with a foobot, like a big robot that helps us out.
Yeah.
Any questions? Any thoughts? You just, I feel like you're still just like distracted about Jack Danger.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Mind a little blown. No, that's great. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's done, because I guess I'm not a huge, you know, pinball stream watcher, but way back when I first got into pinball, a friend of mine sent me a video of his playing the Star Wars machine, the Stern Star Wars machine. And that was kind of like my spark machine. And watching that video is what made me like actually understand how to play it and finally get pinball. So it's very, very cool for me that he's designed a machine that I didn't realize he'd done.
And fairly recent, came out in 2023. So just a year ago.
That's amazing.
What do you say? We should go check it out.
Let's go.
All right, welcome back. What did you think? Foo Fighters. Big impressions.
Okay. I think, first of all, it's just got so much, like, character in this machine. I love the, like, Saturday morning cartoon vibe that the whole machine gives, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy with a brand like the Foo Fighters to just cash in and say, hey, slap a label, put some pictures of faces on here and call it a day.
Yep.
But they really made it their own, and I think that's so cool. Like, make it like a cartoon of the Foo Fighters, and like it's still got the music, but now it's like kind of this cartoon theme. Yep. Like, yeah, it's great.
I'm right there with you. My biggest impression is I am bad at this.
Yeah.
I did not do well.
It was not an easy machine. No.
No, but I also my other really big impression is I love the twist of making this a cartoon. I wrote it kind of felt like a comic book more than a cartoon to me, but you know, same difference. And I think that is such a nice twist compared to other band machines for the same reason you mentioned, like it's not just cashing in. And I loved it. So as we look at, you know, every machine, we look at it on three different categories of interest. One is game design, you know, how unique is the layout? How did the shots flow? Is there any, like, of the unique gimmicks and things, like how do they feel and interact to make the game more compelling? Then we'd look at theme, and that's, you know, the idea of how well does the world that we're trying to explore work in a pinball machine, right? Like did the theme elevate the game experience in some particular way? And lastly, it's fun, right? How much do you want to keep coming back in and putting quarters in this thing and coming back and like trying to master it? And so for all of those, I'm going to take it one by one, starting with design. I'll lead us off here. From a design perspective, the first thing I want to note is I have played the pro version of Foo Fighters. And we mentioned before we left to go play it, Stern has the three different categories. Pro is sort of the bare bones. Premium is like all of the full-fledged designer ideas and features. And I've played Pro a number of times, and I didn't see a meaningful difference really between Premium and Pro. Premium has a new play field in the upper area.
I think it's area
51.
Uh-huh.
And there's like another flipper up there, and you hit some shots or whatever. It's cool. Like, it's cool to see, and it's like fun to interact with. But I think this is actually a kudos to Jack Danger, that when you strip that away, I don't feel like it's a material difference in the game. And that's nice.
I think there was one thing that I noticed, and I'll get to that when we talk maybe in depth about the game design, but there was one thing that or should I just take it now?
Yeah, go for it.
There was a, you know how we've talked about like different mechanisms for having some sort of like pseudo ball save on the side.
Oh, yeah, the hold the left flipper.
There's this, like, overdrive thing, right?
Yeah.
So normally when you go out the left out lane, that ball is just lost, right?
Like it always sucks.
You're not getting it back. It's whatever. But if you can light up this overdrive light, which wasn't that hard. I don't recall exactly
I don't know how it happened.
But it happened to me frequently.
Yeah, same.
That when the ball goes out the left out lane, when normally it would drain, there's a little plastic peg that pops up. And is almost like a jump or a ramp for the ball to like hop back up onto the right flipper, but it doesn't happen automatically. You need to kind of open up the path for it by hitting your left flipper to let it like go through that space. Otherwise, your own left flipper will block the save.
I missed overdrive like the two or three times I unlocked it, and I was like, oh no. Each time it was like, use overdrive, and by the time I've registered it, the ball's already
for whatever reason, the first time that I could do it, I just happened to like reflexively just hit the left flipper for whatever reason, and it was so like exciting and delightful that I caught that. I was like, oh my gosh.
That's so cool. Are you saying that's unique to Premium?
I think so. I don't think I saw it on the Pro. I think I would remember that because that's so unique, and I'm actually pulling up a picture of the Pro right now, and I don't see a peg on it. So, like, I think it's unique to Premium.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's so, all right, I guess there's at least one meaningful material difference.
And it reminds me of, you know, that other machine that I mentioned earlier, the Star Wars machine.
Uh-huh.
This is just a little Jack Danger tie-in, I guess. One of the tricks that I learned from Jack Danger, I had a friend of the show and I who used to play Star Wars pinball together, and he and I would kind of challenge each other and get better. And one of the skills that he learned from Jack Danger, I believe, was something called a death save. Have we talked about a death save
before?
Not
on the show.
So there are on most pinball machines these like little metal slats in the drain area that if you kind of jerk the machine to one side or the other, you can kind of hit the ball against this metal slat that is angled just perfectly to kind of pop the ball back up onto the play field. And it's not an easy skill, right? But I think you watch a guy like Jack Danger, who is kind of like a pro pinball player, if there ever was one, and he's got it down to an art, right? And so learning this skill, my friend and I were able to practice this, and he got it down to an art as well. I never really could. I had maybe a 10% success rate on this maneuver. But it popped the ball back up. And this felt kind of like...
that's an intentional design choice?
No, definitely not.
It's just like something someone figured out this angle works really well.
Yeah, it's just like the way the machines are constructed, there is always this little like angle of the thing there. Because it's not... I don't think it's good for the machine. I don't think you're going to break a machine.
It's also interesting that it doesn't flag tilt often enough. Because like I've seen you attempt it and it's like a... it's a pretty hard jerk.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be. That's my like bad technique. I think if you... I don't know, if you finesse it just right, it's like the... it's like the punch and kill Bill where, like, if you exert just the right force over, like, a 2-inch kind of thing, you can do it. But this felt like a legit death save, kind of like this ball should be gone, but if you do kind of the right thing at the right time, it'll pop right back up for you. And that's
super cool.
That was delightful. That was, like, my favorite design feature of the game.
I also the other design features that I think are in both Premium and Pro that I saw is that, like, you know, there's an orbit loop in like the top left. There's like there's on the far right side, there's an upper flipper. And if you hit it, you can go around this orbit. And on the way down from the orbit, there is like an S curve. Like it goes around and then it hits something else and it like kind of like snakes through. And it's just kind of a satisfying flow for the ball to loop through. There's like a bottom right loop that it also comes through sometimes on the way down to the right lane.
Yeah, I don't know what the economics are on making those nice kind of like
just very aesthetic
shapes, but like it goes a long way in making the game feel polished and nice.
Agreed. And I also think that helps contribute to like this game feels fast, and maybe because I'm super trash, feels very difficult. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if some of the stuff in that contributes to the design. And lastly, I think the lower left play field is like a small little, it's a small short ramp and like a small short orbit. And I'm a sucker for stuff like that, like these like lower playfield areas that are just like really tight area shots that you have to navigate.
It's not like the far end of the machine, but it's something that's like feels close, but still like something you want to hit.
And it's a pretty cool implementation of that. And it's how you start the city mode, hitting that left ramp. So like, I liked it.
That one gave me a lot of trouble for the first couple playthroughs.
Yeah, agreed.
But I kind of got a feel for it, and it wasn't so bad.
I think it's part of that's because you don't see a lot of like ramps like that, right? You don't see like a really short entry ramp area, and like I think something about that, just the angle of attack on it, must feel kind of unique or something. Like,
yeah,
it's
I think it's really steep but short, and they've done the math or whatever.
Yeah.
So that it works out.
Other design thoughts for you?
Yeah, I think there's so much that I like about it. You know, I love that little. I love that little death save thing that I mentioned. And I love the upper play field. I think it looks cool and it's fun to get it up there. But it felt very difficult to hit the shot that you're supposed to on the upper play field with that little stub flipper.
Yeah.
So there's a little flipper. And the idea is you get up to there and it comes around on the little flipper and you hit it up into this kind of difficult like area 51 shot. And I did hit it a couple of times and it was fun. But I'll say this. I think probably more than half the time that I got the ball up onto that upper play field, it didn't have enough speed to go around over the little stub flipper. And instead it just fell down the exit of the upper play field. So that was really disappointing for me to like hit that upper play field shot.
Yeah, I know,
and then just immediately have it come down. I don't even have a chance to hit that difficult payoff shot.
Yeah. So where did you rank this? Out of 5.
I still gave it a 4 because I think so much of it was so nice and like it felt like a good machine. It had like a lot of really nice shots, but there were these little things that kind of bothered me, like that upper play field thing.
Yep.
Also that same shot to get up to the upper play field, I feel like many times I would hit it at just slightly a wrong angle to where it would go partway up but kind of rattle around and then drop straight back down and drain. And that is like, that feels to me like an avoidable design problem.
Yep.
Like a player shouldn't be in a position to get an unavoidable drain out of what felt like a successful shot.
Agreed. Yeah. And I'm right there with you. 4 out of 5 for me. And I agree with your notes.
Talking through it now, I feel like I should dock another point, but I'm going to leave that at a 4.
I think for me, those were less painful. I mean, they were painful, but a lot of that felt legitimately like a skill issue where I didn't feel like it was a fault of the design. I felt like it was a fault of the player. And it's interesting because that's a hard line to balance that we've talked about in a lot of shows where it feels like when a game feels unfair, I dock it. When a game feels fair, but I'm bad, I reward it. And like this is the latter category for me. Like this feels difficult.
That's reasonable,
but I don't feel cheated. Next up, the theme section. I don't have a lot to say about this, so just quickly, I think Aliens are obviously a nice touch here because Foo Fighters is already a reference to UFOs and aliens.
Yeah, so cool.
So that's just it's a small detail, but like it's the obvious design detail for the theme that I think works here. And the comic book adventure mode is really refreshing in any way, which is I think is great because one, the Foo Fighters themselves, like Dave Grohl never takes himself too seriously anyway. And there's enough nods and stuff for the band fans out there who like love the band. But like this is just a great theme for people who don't know who they are. You know what I mean? Like it's just like an alien adventure theme at that point. And I lastly, you know, whenever we talk about a band machine, I think the song choices they choose are important. And I think all of these knock it out of the park. They're all killer. So you choose like a cassette to put in the van at the start of
the
ball.
That was really fun. The cassette was a good touch.
But what's also cool is when you choose a city, a totally different song starts playing that was never selectable via
cassette. Is that right? So I thought like, some of them were, but maybe you're right.
Maybe some of them.
But I didn't pay close enough attention.
Seattle was the mode I'd always go to first, and like that does This Is a Calling, which is not one of the songs.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right then. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I think I don't have a lot to add to that. I think you touched all the points that I wanted to. I love the alien theming because it's something on top of you know, the obvious choice of just like a band going on tour, right? I like the idea of the cities being the different modes. That was kind of fun. The only kind of like downside I would say is that like having band members be like a specific shot on the play field and like picking a song, like that's exactly what every band machine does. So it's not super unique.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Even though I love those songs.
Trite.
It was like, you could have done more, I thought.
Yeah.
I did love the UFO theming, though. I don't know if you noticed these, like, side LEDs that would kind of light up the playfield and kind of, like, pulse back and forth.
There
are
these, no.
Like, on the inside of the machine, there are these, like, LED strips that I don't think I've seen a lot of that kind of stuff. And that added to the atmosphere.
Nice little touch.
So I gave it a 4.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 4 out of 5 for me.
Cool.
And so lastly, then fun. What do you got for me on fun?
Yeah, I think the pros on fun were that, like, I love the cartoon. It was fun to watch the cartoon. Mm-hmm. It gave a cool sense of progression to see, like, when you beat a city, when you, you know, progress the whatever the story of the cartoon. I really liked that. But I think that for me, kind of the dominating factor on the fun was that I was just not good at it, the machine.
Yep.
And it felt like a machine that you needed to practice like a lot to get good at it. And, you know, I didn't have as much fun as I did on some other machines. As much as I love the Foo Fighters and I love the theme of this game, it wasn't as fun, I think, because I know that I need to put in work to get good at this machine and really do everything. So I ended up giving it a 3 on fun.
That's a very valid take, and I have very similar notes, right? I said my main note that I wrote down is I'm so bad at this, but I did want to keep playing it. So like I felt like, and I acknowledge here in the fun section that I think it's the aesthetic and the theme that are really driving a lot of that. And ultimately to the design point where I feel like it's hard, but I don't feel like it's asking me to do something impossible. I just feel like you said, you have to put in a lot of time. That said, I did feel like outside of unlocking the different cities, I found it kind of hard to figure out what I should be shooting. And it's funny to say that because it's supposed to be the white lit arrows. I just feel like it must come with time, but I felt like keeping track of the lit arrows wasn't enough of a, like, please be here kind of thing. I mean, it's because they were white. Like, maybe the colors could have been more poppy or something. I don't know for me to know what shots I should have focused on. And lastly, I mentioned it in the theme, but I think it's worth pointing out from a fun point of view that the cartoon and alien appeal has a way broader spectrum of appeal to people that are not just fans of the band.
Yeah.
In that, for me, adds to the fun. I like the Foo Fighters. I would say I'm a fan. I would probably go to a concert if given a chance, I guess. But I'm not like a diehard Foo Fighters person. There's like a couple of songs that I know and like. And so for me, like, this draws me in more than, you know, some other band machines that I've seen where I'm like, like Iron Maiden, right? And I like Iron Maiden. They have a Stern machine as well. And I feel like it's less approachable.
Yeah, kind of almost inaccessible. I think one that would maybe appeals more to like diehard Iron Maiden fans, but like the skeleton and like World War One imagery on that machine is like not super approachable.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get into that to the day we cover Iron Maiden. But like that's for me, that's an obvious contrast to that. Like,
I hear you.
So for me, this is actually a 4 out of 5 on fun.
Okay.
And I for me, I think it has enough of the hooks to pull me back in to try and be better. With that said, I only got two. I only wrote down 2 competition games. And I don't know if we just ran out of time at the bar. I can't remember. Or I just was so I was just so over it that I was like the last – maybe I just didn't write down the last one because it was such a bad score. I think that might have been the case.
Okay.
So we try to play 3 competition games after we've taken enough time to analyze the machine. And we take our best score of those 3 games in our competition. And I don't think it'll be a surprise that you're going to outpace me here. I only ended up with 42,400,430. Oh, that's my best game.
I mean, that's not so bad. I only beat you on 2 of my 3. So, you know, you did.
And that's like, by the way, that's like 3 times better than my only other score I wrote down. Like, it was a bad, it was a bad game.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think it's one that, like, you just need to practice this one. And I had a couple of good games, but not great by any means, right? Like,
yeah, no replay. I don't think either of us got any
replays. I don't think I got a replay. I don't think I beat more than 1 or 2 cities even. Yeah. So, like, and you need to beat all 6 cities or however many it is there are. This is one where one time in a bar I found it and I was able to turn it to play the final wizard mode.
Oh, cool.
By putting in quarters and playing wizard mode instead. And that was really fun. And I actually did really well, surprisingly, on it somehow. But I've never, ever gotten close to it, you know, starting from beginning. Anyway, I did beat you, but not by that much. 62,370,200.
Oh, that's actually much closer than I would have thought.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
That's decent.
It was pretty good.
Any other, what do you think? Any closing thoughts here before we take off?
I guess just if you put in some more time on the game and practice, you won't be such a pretender.